Hello and welcome to episode 21. Holy smokes, that's getting to be a big number, of Cavalytics. We are a podcast about the NBA's Cleveland Cavaliers with a focus on statistical analysis. I am Keith Carter, a long-time Cavs fan whose first favorite player was Dan Majerle, which might help date me for some of our older listeners. My co-host is Arnav Chabra, a PhD candidate at MIT with an honestly insatiable appetite for NBA and Cavaliers numbers. Speaking of Arnav, how's it going, my friend?
It's going well. How about you?
Great. The Cavs just pummeled the Atlanta Hawks and broke all kinds of records. But before we get into that, let me finish the intro. So our podcast is hosted on SoundCloud and is available on iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast app is. You can follow us on Twitter at CavalyticsNBA, and you can email us at CavalyticsNBA@gmail.com. Please reach out. We love hearing from you guys, and we actually have a couple things from listeners that we're going to share tonight. Before tonight's game started, we decided we were going to do an episode on staying optimistic and on J.R. Smith, but after tonight's game, it's probably going to be a little bit hard to believe we came up with those items on our own before the game, but so be it. But before we get into tonight's glorious win against the Hawks, I'd like to address something that we've received quite a bit of feedback on, and that is about the sort of occasional negative and defeatist tone of our show. So I am fully aware that myself in particular, probably I come off as a fairly pessimistic fan. I think that's because most of the folks I talk to about the Cavs have a tendency to overstate, in my opinion, the Cavs' chances. I'm keenly aware of the Cavs' chances. I spend an inordinate amount of time trying to figure out exactly what the Cavs' chances are. And though I may be off by a bit, I think our chances of winning the finals are probably around 15 to 20% right now. And those just aren't very good. And that really bums me out. And the feeling of inevitability of all of this is a little bit hard for me to fight through and maintain positivity about. That said, the return of LeBron James to the Cavs has been a real gift, and I need to do a better job keeping that in mind and to try to do a better job enjoying the successes that we do have. So I'm going to try to stay mindful of that and to keep the tenor of this podcast a bit more cheery. And fortunately tonight, and hopefully going forward, we're going to have some great things to say that are optimistic. Do you have anything you'd like to add to that, Arnav?
Yeah, I mean, tonight's only going to help, right?
Yeah.
And I completely agree with you that like watching these teams, like I spend a lot of my time watching the rest of the league as well. So I've watched a lot of the Spurs and I watched a lot of the Warriors. And it is easy to sort of get trapped in the hype that's been surrounding those teams. And it's justifiable hype too. And sort of it's kind of easy to get a defeatist attitude. But I think, like you said, we're going to try to be more and more positive on the show. And there's a lot of things to be positive about in this playoffs. Like I think we were talking about before, if you asked me before the playoffs what would be the path for the Cavs to defeat the Warriors, my answer would have been make a lot of threes and take a lot of threes. And that's exactly what they've been doing. So there's a lot of good things to be gleaned from that.
Yeah, I completely agree. So, all right, let's kick off our new resolve for positivity by talking about tonight's game. So the Cavs won 123-98. They are now up 2-0 in their Eastern Conference semifinal series against the Atlanta Hawks. I was really disappointed with the way that Matthew Dellavedova played tonight. He was 1 of 7. I'm just kidding. He was 1 of 7, but that is not the story of tonight. The Cavs made 25 threes. They made 25 of 45 threes. They shot 56% from three, and that is a new NBA record for threes in a game. The previous record in the regular season was 23. The previous postseason record was 21, and the Cavs just looked absolutely incredible tonight.
Do you think this was the best half in Cavaliers history? The first half?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, my history doesn't really start before sort of 1992-ish, but or at least my thorough history of understanding the Cavs doesn't start before that. But yeah, I think, you know, given the sort of situation and the execution of tonight, yeah, that first half was unbelievable. The Cavs were up 15. They were up 32 points at halftime, and they made 18 threes in the first half. The previous record for threes in a half was like what was it, 11, 12, 13?
13, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So they broke the record by like 40% and 35%, and yeah, just looked incredible doing it. Yeah,
Yeah, I
I'm
agree.
sort of speechless. Like, it's
I
incredible.
would add that probably the final the half in game three of the finals, where the Cavs I think were up by like 10 or 15 going into the halftime, was probably the best because of just because of the implications, you know.
Yeah, considering the
Home win
opponent.
in the NBA finals is a big deal.
Right.
So I would say that's probably up there with this one. But yeah, execution and like setting aside the fact that was the finals, I think this was the best half in Cleveland history.
Yeah, I mean it was incredibly fun to watch. Twitter was going insane. I mean, just everything the Cavs put up went in. J.R. Smith in particular in the first half was just stunning. I mean, this box score is sort of unbelievable. So the Cavs overall were 25 of 45 from three. LeBron was 4 of 6. Kevin Love was 3 of 4. Kyrie Irving was 4 of 5. Richard Jefferson was 2 of 2. Iman Shumpert was 1 of 1. And then you start getting into, some quote unquote not so good ones. So J.R. Smith was 7 of 13, which is still over 50%. Channing Frye was 1 of 3. Dellavedova was 1 of 3. I mean, it was just across the board, unbelievable. And the Hawks are what, they were the second best defensive team in the NBA this season?
Second best defensive team in the NBA this season, and the best defensive team since January 1. So best defensive team in 2016.
It's almost hard to figure out exactly what to say. Like it was transcendently amazing. It was incredible.
But we're just such a bad matchup for them. Like I kind of feel bad, but not really, because they're actually a really good team, but they're just not going to be able to show it against us. And a lot of that is because of the way they defend. What they've done a really good job of is clogging the lanes. So like if you watch that Celtics series, they were helping aggressively off of the shooters. And I think they still have some of those tendencies left as they try to do tonight, and that really backfired for them.
Yeah, obviously whatever they were doing tonight didn't work. I think also they got a little bit discouraged. I know at some point, I think it was in the late third quarter, I saw a tweet that the Cavs were rebounding 40% of their misses, so their offensive rebounding percent was 40%. I mean, that's unheard of. So even when they did miss, which wasn't often, they were getting second chances.
Yeah, either Tristan would get it or Love would get it, or even LeBron had some offensive rebounds.
Right. Yeah, it's just I
It's an insane show tonight.
yeah, it was fireworks. It was fun. I sort of alluded to this already, but just the all the tweets flying around is everybody, I think people heard about it and started tuning in, and anybody who is at all connected to the NBA was was tweeting about it. It was fun.
Yeah, and I think Cavs had what 18 at the half, like you said,
Yes.
and by that number by itself would have been the ninth best record in any game in the NBA
So
in terms of 3-point
I
making.
saw that tweet, the tweet that said, yeah, the Cavs had enough threes to be the ninth best number of threes ever in a playoff game. I think it was when the Cavs were at 17, though. I think it was before they made their 18th three. So I don't
Okay.
know what the record is for 18. I could look it up on Play Index later, but pretty good. Pretty,
I have a
pretty good.
question for you. If
I'm
you're
ready.
Mike Budenholzer, like, what are you gonna say to your, what do you say to your team after this?
I'm having an awkward pause now, which is probably similar to what he's gonna have. I mean, look.
What's the positive spin you can put, right? Like a.
Well, they're going home, so they get game three at home in Atlanta. We're not going to make 56% of our threes, and we're probably not gonna take 45 threes again. So, there's no, they're not gonna have to withstand that sort of, air raid again. But yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
So I did the calculation, and it looks like the Cavs shot 16 of 38 on 2 points. So that can be a positive spin for them, that they did a good job inside the 3-point line. And the 2-point and the th and the 3-point line, as you said, is kind of unsustainable, obviously. Like, we're not going to shoot 25 or 45 again. If we do, they should probably just end the playoffs and give us the trophy.
Yeah, that's right. If they would
There
like
should
to
be a
do that,
rule, right?
I would
If
take
you make 25 threes 2 times in a row, or 2 times
it.
it in the playoffs, you should get the trophy.
It's like automatically.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a good new rule. They should do that. Yeah, I mean, just it's incredible. It's just, I mean, it wasn't just the threes. I mean, there were so many good things about tonight's game. So, like for example, Tristan Thompson, again with the offensive rebounding, he had 4. Kevin Love had 6. I noticed something about Tristan tonight that I hadn't necessarily internalized. I think I've been noticing it for a while, but I hadn't internalized it. When he gets offensive rebounds now, he pulls it down and secures it, and then looks around to make an outlet pass. Early in this season, and definitely last season, he could be a little bit irresponsible sometimes when he like reclaimed that second possession, and now he's just, you know, locking it down. You know, the Hawks seem completely unable to do anything with Love. Love again tonight was not great. He was 3 of 12, but he's still like staying involved. He had 13 rebounds. His defense is still incredible.
Yeah, no, he had 6 offensive rebounds. That's amazing.
Do you have any concern about Love? He was 3 of 12 tonight. I think he
I
was.
think he's not going hard in the paint. I think when he goes up for two pointers, especially near the rim, he's either trying to lay it up, kind of just, he's kind of working around the defenders as opposed to trying to get fouled like he was earlier in the season. So I'm not concerned, but I just think he needs to adjust in that area. Well, obviously he was great from 3-point line again. He was three of four.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if I think I don't. I'm not sure I agree that Love may be doing something different around the hoop. I think he's just been unlucky.
I mean, it happens, right? Like
yeah, it
you have
does.
unlucky nights.
I'm trying to think if there's anything I would nitpick about tonight. I thought they left LeBron in a little bit too long. But
Yeah, at the end, I think they could have called the timeout a little earlier, but that's whatever.
yeah, I think I tweeted something to the effect of so. They were trying to get him out for a while. They were trying to get him out, and then he got fouled, so he had to shoot free throws, so they couldn't get him out at that stoppage. And then they had a couple more possessions where they couldn't get him out, and then they eventually called a timeout. I mean, my feeling is if you're willing to burn a timeout to get him out, just call it as soon as you want to get him out. Don't wait
Yeah.
to try. I mean, when you're up 35, you don't need to save timeouts anyway. But yeah, I mean, I'm really sort of nitpicking here.
Yeah, LeBron's foul shooting. He was 5 of 9. Whatever. Oh,
Sure, sure.
here's a funny thing. So you know how the entire season we've been talking about Mozgov and how he always has a negative plus minus.
Yes.
He somehow managed to have a minus 13 tonight.
Holy smokes. I see that myself. Yeah, so let's qualify that a little bit. So he played, I believe, the last 12, he played 12 minutes 51 seconds. I think he played the final 12:51 of the game. The final 12:51 of the game were a bit odd. The Cavs were pretty clearly aware that they were in record-setting territory, and they
They were
just
just, yeah.
all they did was huck up threes, and they did not shoot them at a high percentage, and so they weren't scoring much. And then, you know, the Hawks were playing garbage time too, but because the Cavs were sort of singularly focused on making a few extra threes, they didn't, you know, they weren't playing the hardest defense, and the Hawks sort of took advantage of that. So yeah, Mozgov was a minus 13. Mo Williams was also a minus 11. Everyone else on the team, the worst is Dante Jones at minus 3, James Jones at minus 1. Everyone else was positive, and led by J.R. Smith at plus 29. LeBron was plus 24, Love plus 25, Irving plus 17, Thompson plus 18. You just go down. Everyone looks awesome. Yeah, poor Timo.
Moscow just always finds a way to be
I
negative on
mean,
that.
it's his poor RPM is gonna plummet.
Yeah.
And speaking of RPM, this is gonna be great for the Cavs regulars because yeah, the RPM is gonna show that the Cavs were more effective when they had the regulars in, and
Yeah.
should
Well, it's
give
going to
them a
adjust for
boost.
the thing is that it also adjusts for the opponent. So we know the opponent wasn't as good.
That's
So
true.
it kind of takes care of that.
That's
But
true.
one thing I also want to mention is the Hawks actually shot well from three today too. They were 41%. Do you know what's the total number of combined threes, or was that stat
I
anywhere?
was wondering, I checked on Play Index. It's tough. You can look for a single team. It's hard to look for two team records.
Because there were 36 threes tonight
Yeah.
made
That
overall. But,
feels like it's probably a record since 18 in a game was the
it's
ninth
like up
best
there,
was the
right?
ninth
Yeah.
best ever. So
Yeah.
unless two of those nine were both 18
We're
point
just like
games
shootouts.
in the same, yeah, but unless two of those 18 were both in the same game, like it's, you know,
Yeah,
it'd be
exactly.
tough.
It's tough. I agree.
Let's see, what else happened today? Oh, Did you hear them mention toward the beginning of the game that Jeff Teague is injured? So he played tonight, but apparently
I did hear that, yeah.
he has a left Achilles injury and a right ankle, or maybe it was right Achilles and left ankle. And he said that they're actually bothering him quite a bit. I didn't
I
actually
don't
hear
think it
up
would
to
have made
that.
a difference, but
No, it wouldn't, but that's sort of too bad for them.
So, do you want to talk about LeBron's jumper and what we heard and then what we've been sort of keeping a counter for?
Yeah, I think now's a good time to do that. Go ahead.
So I think someone on ESPN, I think it was Coach Thorpe. I'm not really sure who he is exactly, but he apparently has followed LeBron for a while, and he does a good job of breaking down tape and looking at people's jumpers and seeing what they're doing properly and what they're not doing properly. So obviously, there's been a lot of hand-wringing about LeBron's jumper and that it's been broken for a while. And he's been basically tracking how he's, like, basically what form LeBron's been using. And one of the main things he pointed out was that when LeBron is shooting well, he is typically landing with both feet down and landing with a balanced posture. But when he's not shooting well, it's often with an unbalanced posture and like 1 feet up in the air and 1 feet down on the floor, or something weird happening, or like he's trying to do a fadeaway posture.
In particular, he talked about how he seems to they showed a bunch of clips on the SportsCenter segment, and he has a tendency to land on his left foot with his right foot sort of kicked out forward because he's leaning backwards and he needs to use the right foot to sort of adjust his sort of center of gravity so that he doesn't fall backwards.
Exactly.
It's if you watch the video, it's pretty profound. And so you decided
Actually,
to make a
so
study of this tonight, right?
apparently there was an anecdote in the video. I kind of wanted to mention this. So Coach Thorpe apparently talked to one of LeBron's old coaches from high school, and what LeBron used to do in high school was that he was so good and he was so much better than everyone else on the court that he used to intentionally try fadeaway shots on all threes just so he could make it harder for himself. And
Really?
he hypothesizes that that's kind of been ingrained into his jump shot, and that's the reason why he's always sort of on and off. Some days his jumper looks good, other days it looks crappy.
Huh. I'd never heard that before. That's interesting. Okay, so the hypothesis is when he was 16 and 17 and 18, he was so good that in order to sort of like up the degree of difficulty, he would intentionally shoot off-balance
Fadeaways on
shots.
threes, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Okay, all right.
I mean, I buy it, but who
Yeah, I
knows?
mean, that sounds
Could be
possible, but who
confirmation
knows?
bias.
Yeah, of course.
Either way, so I thought both of us, I think, have been tracking LeBron's jumper this game, and
Yes.
we have some good results. Do you want to mention yours, and then I can mention mine, or we can go either way?
Yeah, so in order to like make sure that we were not giving each other bias, we each tracked it. I missed one of LeBron's threes tonight. So I did see all four of his makes, but I missed one of his misses. So I don't know what happened on that one. But I had him on so I have him with five threes taken. I have him on three off balanced, and he made two of those and two on balance, and he made both of those. That's what I have.
I have three off balance, two on balance, and then I have one half-ish,
Okay.
which it was weird. I think it was one of those threes early on where it looked like one of his legs was kind of flailing out and it was coming back slowly. It was hard to tell. You could say it's off balance. So I would say three balance and three unbalanced. And like you said, yeah, he made two of the balanced ones and
Missed one.
missed one of the off balanced ones. Yeah.
So he was two of three for both, right?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I
this
mean,
is
this is
obviously a
obviously
great
not a
indicator.
statistic.
A
Yeah, I
small
mean,
sample size by issue here. But
we'll try to keep track of it and see if
okay.
it's
Yeah, all
the same.
right. So I'm gonna type this down right now. Two of three on each.
One thing I noticed in the beginning of the game was that Love was exerting a lot of effort on the offensive boards, and just looking at the box score, he had six offensive rebounds, so it kind of paid off for him, which was good to see. Do you remember that pass that LeBron made at some point? That crazy one.
The one, oh, the bounce pass.
There was a bounce pass in last game where he made it to Richard Jefferson, and there
Yes.
was another crazy pass. I think it was single-handed pass to Love, and then he passed it off for another
Oh, right.
three
Okay. Yeah.
somehow.
There were two passes tonight that were spectacular. Okay. So the one you're talking about was in the first quarter, or maybe early in the second. And LeBron was past the ball sort of out near the top of the three-point line, and he caught it, I believe, in his left hand. Was it left-handed?
It was left-handed,
Yeah,
yeah.
he caught it in his left hand,
Near the rim, right?
and then sort of used the momentum of the ball to cock his arm, and then threw it, like basically deep into the paint, at Kevin Love. At like, yeah, somebody joked on Twitter, it was like 100 mile per hour four seam fastball, and then yeah, Love caught it, then passed it, and I think the Cavs ultimately got a three in the corner on that possession.
That would be a good bet, especially
yeah.
in the first half.
Yeah, that's true. It was probably a three. Yeah, so that was the first one. There was one, I think, in the second half, and it was another bounce pass to Richard Jefferson on the break. And it was a two-handed bounce pass, and just he kept it low to the ground, and it was so hard and so fast and so pinpoint accurate that, his passing has been on point lately. He had only two turnovers tonight again.
Yeah, I think Kevin had one of those he had one of his touchdown passes tonight too, right? Do you remember
I
that?
Did.
To LeBron.
I do.
And he finished in a triple team or something at the end.
Yeah, it was not the best touchdown pass. It was passed to LeBron. LeBron jumped up and got it, but it was not, it was a little bit risky.
Oh yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And
it was
then,
a little risky.
And then LeBron was triple teamed under the hoop. He may have traveled, but let's ignore that. And then he pump faked like three times and like went through three people and laid it in. It was awesome. It was a good play. There's so many plays to Vine tonight. I mean,
I agree. Tonight's going to be a
fun.
Vine night for most
yeah.
people. I'm going to go ahead and watch all the threes after this.
Yeah, well,
enjoy.
I mean, do you have a couple hours? Because that's how long it'll take. So what
also,
else happened today? Go
yeah,
ahead.
I want to talk about... So do you think anybody else in the NBA right now can make passes like that? Like those quick passes that require a lot of strength,
no.
but also pinpoint accuracy
yeah,
and
no,
the vision.
No, LeBron's combination of vision and strength is sort of unparalleled. You might be able to argue that Chris Paul has slightly better vision.
But not the strength, right?
But the strength is just not there. Rondo also has incredible court vision. Rubio as well. But yeah, they don't have like they don't have the muscle.
Did you have the privilege of watching Magic back in the day?
I watched him some. I was so young that it's really hard for me to, you know, so I'm 35, I was born in 1980. It's hard for me to sort of have like an objective comparison because I didn't, you know, I was,
yeah.
obviously I'm a little bit more analytical now than I was then. And, you know, it was more of an emotional, I was a child. But yeah, he was likewise spectacular. I think it's probably the case that LeBron is stronger and Magic had a little bit better vision, but you know, that's just my bias and memory.
Yeah, I've seen some tape, only a little bit, and yeah, it looks like I agree with what you said. It looks like LeBron's a bit stronger and Magic probably was a little bit better passer.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting watching these old games. I mean, we don't have to spend too much time on this, but it's interesting watching old games. I mean, you know, you only get it in 480p. You know, we get everything now in 720, sometimes 1080, and you know, they don't have like the ultra slow-mo and the 60 frame per second replays that we get now. So even if I was old enough, you know, it would be hard to make absolutely objective.
And you don't get these vines afterwards where
right.
you can just...
Yeah, you can't go to the NBA subreddit and get just everything distilled down into perfect 7 second clips like you can now.
Right. So one of the things that I thought was really good, besides obviously the three-point shooting, was that the Cavs were really good on defense, well, for the first three quarters. And the last quarter was obviously garbage time. But
right.
I thought the first three quarters, they just did an amazing job on the Hawks. And even though they were firing on all cylinders on offense, they still kept the brakes on them on defense.
Yeah.
Which was really good to see, I thought.
I agree. The caveat there is, like, look, this game was over in the first quarter. It's a little bit hard for the Hawks to like fully run their offense, and it's pretty easy for the Cavs to fully run their defense when the Cavs just have like full adrenaline, and the Hawks are, you know, sort of a little bit beaten. That said, I mean, the Hawks couldn't do anything. I mean, they were bumbling on offense. It was awesome.
They had what, 38 points or something in the first
right.
half?
Yeah, I think it was 74-38 at halftime.
Yeah,
we're on pace for 100 and whatever 48 points.
Also, what I noticed was that Love has done a very good job of guarding Al Horford in the post. Al actually couldn't get much around him, even though Al is supposedly a good post player.
Yeah, Horford was 3 of 7 again tonight, minus 22.
And then Tristan just is shutting down Paul Millsap. I mean, Paul Millsap has no chance against him.
Yeah, he looks frustrated. He looks a little out of sorts, too. He had a couple fumbles. He had a couple fumbles underneath the hoop. He had three turnovers tonight. It's just not
right.
really his game, but...
Tristan just completely shut him down. I mean, we kind of knew that coming into the series because of last year's series and also because of the regular season, but he's just done an amazing job on Millsap especially.
Following up like a story from the last game, Korver was 3 of 7 again. Just he only played 19 minutes, but yeah, still JR doing a good job on him.
Yeah, he got a few. He got some good looks in the beginning, but yeah.
He did his first three. I don't know if he was wide open, but he was open.
Yeah, but we'll live with those. I mean, you can't
And it
shut him
was
down for
a
this
straight
long.
away three, right? Like, you want to make sure you really run them off the corner threes. Straight away threes. Look, you don't want to give quarter open threes from anywhere, but but it wasn't
You'll live
terrible
with those, yeah.
defense. Let's see. Okay, so did you see the article? I don't remember where it was today, talking about LeBron and Tyronn Lue's relationship.
Oh, the ESPN one by Brian.
Oh, was it Windhorse? Okay.
Yeah, it was.
So just to summarize, he was talking about how LeBron has, in Brian Windhorst's opinion, been going out of his way to credit Tyronn Lue with a number of things. So he's paid reference to how the Cavs have a game plan and they stick to it. He's talked about how they they trust in the system. He's talked about how when timeouts get called, even when the Cavs have given up a bunch of points, they feel like the coaching staff is very even keeled and stop, sort of panic from spreading. Can you remember anything else?
I think he was comparing to Vlad and sort of what happened in that Chicago series when
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. So, in game four of the Chicago series, LeBron James made a baseline jumper to win the game. And LeBron famously in the post-game press conference said that that was his call. David Blatt wanted to do something else. And LeBron waved him off. By the way, LeBron James, I think, went like 10 of 33 in that game. So David Blatt wanting to go with someone else was absolutely the right decision. But setting that aside, LeBron waved him off, said he waved him off, and took and made the shot. Windhorse, I think, mentioned that we just haven't seen that since Lue took over. And LeBron has been sort of unusually vocal about Tyronn Lue.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But one thing I want to mention is that Cavs haven't really had any adversity so far in the playoffs, right? Like, of course they've been down like a few times and they've given up some leads,
Right.
but it is nothing compared to what they're going to face in the finals. So
Right. Or the
they haven't
conference
had a true
finals.
test yet, you know? It's
Right. They
easy to
haven't
say now
lost.
when they're winning well, but
That's true. Yeah, look, when you're 6-0 in the playoffs, everything looks awesome. Nobody's doing anything wrong. Everything's great. So yeah, you're right. Like the now is a particularly unfair time to sort of judge things, but I like the things that LeBron is saying. I mean, Arnav, our listeners don't, but yeah, one of my major complaints, and we argued a little bit about this, but one of my major complaints about the Blatt era was it just seemed like LeBron's body language towards him was not what I would like to see, and he just seems to, be more respectful of Coach Lue, and that's good. That's really good.
Yeah, I agree.
Go ahead.
I just don't like being a body language doctor, to be honest with you, because I don't think I have a very good feel, especially if I'm not at the game. I think if I'm at the game and on the sidelines, I can do a very good job.
Yeah. It's so anecdotal and it's so
Yeah.
easily thrown off by personal bias. So,
Personal bias, yeah, that's the biggest thing.
when we used to argue about this, I mean, I would dig in my heels a little bit, but I mean, I concede that my personal bias may, have over informed my opinions there. But all I
Obviously, there
know
was
is,
something, right? Because he got fired. I mean,
well, sure.
let's put it this way, if LeBron liked him, he wouldn't have gotten fired. I'm not saying that LeBron was the reason he got fired, but if LeBron liked him, there is no way he would have gotten
Right.
fired.
That's
Is
right.
that correct? Is that a
Yeah,
correct? Do you think that's an accurate
that's
assessment?
right. That's right. yeah, LeBron was definitely not begging David Griffin to keep him. Okay, let's talk about I mean it's so silly to talk about this now because they changed what they were doing, but let's talk about J.R. Smith a little bit. Why don't you start?
Yeah. So I think it's funny because now everyone's going to be like, duh. But
I know, I know.
before the game, I think I think I emailed you or I messaged you and I said that we should be utilizing JR a little more. I think we're underutilizing him. And obviously, it makes sense after tonight's game. But I think we need to run more sets for him where he's coming off of curls or just getting him more threes because he's been doing such an amazing job of shooting. And I think we need to ride that hand as much as possible. And because that's going to be probably the best path for us to try to compete against the Golden State Warriors.
Yeah,
We're not going
so.
to be an elite defensive team. We're not going to shut them down defensively. The best way for us to beat them is to be completely unstoppable offensively.
Yeah, so I strongly agree with everything you say, and I'm going to add even a little bit more color to that. So the Cavs have been underutilizing J.R. Smith. He has been sort of stellar for the better part of a month and a half now. Tonight he was 7 of 13, but there have been a number of games where he finishes like sort of 3 of 6 or something, and it's like, well, why isn't he 4 of 8 or 5 of 12 or something? He has become, I was going to say borderline elite. He's become objectively elite at spot-up three-point shooting.
He's always
He,
been elite at spot up 3-point shooting.
yeah,
Let's clear that up.
that's right,
But
that's right.
he's not like in these playoffs, he's been elite at 3-point shooting, period. Not just
Right.
spot up, like even off the dribble.
Did you see what Kyle Korver said about him today?
Yeah, he's a top 5 underrated shooter.
Yeah. Korver was talking about who he thinks underrated shooters are, and he was saying that, yeah, J.R. Smith is right in there, and he said, guarding him is impossible because he can make crazy shots. So even when you're there, you just have to sort of concede those. And yeah, that's not faint praise from a guy who would know.
Who's probably the best
Right.
spot-up shooter in NBA history. I
Right.
mean,
Yeah,
that
that's
guy
the
has had
thing.
50-plus shooting percentage, like several seasons. He's really good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, if there's ever an authority on the topic, it would be him.
Him or Clay Thompson.
I mean, I'm not sure what to say. I mean, they got J.R. Smith 14 shots tonight. Some of those were not what I would call rhythm jumpers, but when they're going in like they were, I mean, you just have to sort of that's an aspect of J.R. Smith's game that we've talked about this
We gotta
before. You
let him
just sort of,
loose.
yeah,
Like
you
we
just have to
cannot.
tolerate it. And
It's okay to, and it's part of what makes JR a really good shooter. Like I think if we try to contain the types of shots he's taking, he's also going to get worse on the spot up ones. I don't know if maybe I'm wrong there, but it seems like confidence is a big part of his game.
yeah, I think the same about the bad shots that J.R. Smith's taking as I feel about the shots that Love is missing right now. Just keep shooting, fellas. Like, keep your rhythm. You want to be you want them to be sort of as comfortable as they can. And, in Love's case, he's missing a little bit more than I would like right now, but I would rather him be taking a healthy number of shots and be missing easy ones than have him taking, eight shots and sort of wondering where he is after the first quarter.
Exactly.
And with J.R. Smith, he's going to take, especially when he's, quote unquote, feeling it, he's going to take one or two or three or, a half dozen shots that you wish he wouldn't, but that's part of his game. It's part of what opens up the rest of the floor because whoever's on him feels like, they need to be like, breathing in his face. And, that's his game.
Like obviously, Klay Thompson's a better player and way more versatile than JR. But they have very similar shooting strokes and very similar 3-point career percentages. Okay, I think Klay's a little better, but I think JR, at least we can use him similarly to what they how they use Klay Thompson, especially on the shooting. Klay Thompson's a pretty good driver now too, but I think I don't want to say a poor man's Klay Thompson because I think JR is better than that. But if he's like a, like 75% of what Klay Thompson does, we can ask of JR.
He's like a middle class man's.
Middle class man's, yeah,
Yeah,
sure.
there you go. I mean, he's been. I when the Cavs made that trade, we've been through this before, but I'm gonna do it again just for fun. When the Cavs made that trade, I was so I wanted Shumpert. I was pleased with that, but I was so irritated with J.R. Smith because I just
I mean,
I didn't.
he had a bad reputation. There's no denying that.
And part of the things that give him a bad reputation, some of the boneheaded fouls and sort of making worse of situations, he still does. But
He's
the
cut it out though, right? Like
he has he has no he hasn't
I
he
think he's
hasn't
cut
done
it
anything.
down a lot now. We saw what one flagrant from him, and that was last game, and I think that was also unintentional, right?
Yeah, we talked about that on the last show. I mean, that wasn't really. That was a flagrant foul by the letter of the law, but that wasn't a flagrant foul by the sort of, trying to stop people from doing overtly, aggressive
I agree.
things. So
I agree with that.
anyway, yeah, I mean, hopefully the Cavs continue to, find ways to get him, sort of 10 to 20, 10 to 15 shots a game, because I think that will help them.
So where do you think their shots should come from? Because you got to reduce someone's shots, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to take away Love's shots either, because, like you said, part of it is keep him involved and keep his confidence up. I think they maybe LeBron can cut his some of his shots down, because we know there's no lack of confidence for him, right?
Yeah, but I
He can
mean,
always get his if he wants to.
but Arnav, here's the easy things to say. We should cut out the bad shots that James and Irving take and give them to Smith. It's like, well, yeah, of course, but
It's tough to do.
yeah, like all of those guys need to take their one or two bad shots a game because that's part of their rhythm. So yeah, I mean, it's sort of a good question. I mean, you look at the Cavs box score tonight. Thompson took five shots, but I mean, normally he's sort of in the 2 to 3 range, so I guess he could take two less, but. All the shots he takes are almost always off of offensive rebounds, and they're tip-in attempts. So, you can't. It's not like they're running plays for Thompson, so you can't take shots away from him. It's a good question. I don't know where they come from.
Yeah, I would say maybe reduce a little bit of Kyrie's spot up, like off the dribble
Yeah.
mid-rangers that he takes. But even Kyrie's, I feel like, lacked a lot of confidence this regular season because he wasn't shooting well. But he is now, so that's good.
Yeah. One other thing I want to say about J.R. Smith is he is able to play a boatload of minutes without
Without a good tiring, right?
showing fatigue. I mean, have you
Yeah.
noticed that about him?
He's an incredible athlete. I mean,
Like, have
he's.
you ever seen him, like, holding his shorts, panting for breath, like you sometimes see with Irving and LeBron? Like, it's
No.
amazing.
Who do you think deserves more money in the off season? He or Dele?
Boy.
I would say JR, right?
Oh gosh.
But yeah.
I don't
He's
know.
so important for like a potent offense. Who knows?
I don't know, man. That's
Who
a
do you think is gonna
really good
make more?
question.
Let's put it that way. Let's forget the deserve part. Who's gonna make more?
I almost feel like I need to sit down and do research to answer this question. I'll give you my like off the cuff guess.
Yeah, like whatever you think of.
I think Dellavedova will make more because I think that people will like his age and his sort of good teammate reputation. And some of, J.R. Smith's ghosts of the past will haunt him a little bit, like I think they did last offseason.
Okay, I think that's fair, and I agree.
I don't know if that's right. I don't know if that's. I need to look at, like, RPM and think about it a little bit. But so I don't know if that's, like, the way it should be, but I think that's the way it will be.
Okay, yeah, I can see that. Also, one thing I want to mention is that even though Cavs were shooting a lot of threes, LeBron actually didn't settle that much. There were a few plays where I thought he settled for a three. He kept driving incessantly,
Yes.
which kind of ticked me off a little because I was worried about an injury.
Yeah.
But other than that, he was not settling at all today.
Yeah, he had 27 points on 15 shots.
Yeah. That is good. That is very good.
Yes, that is good. J.R. Smith had 23 on 14. I mean, this is an insane game, man. Channing
Oh,
Frye,
and LeBron
12
got
on
foul
7.
calls.
What was that?
LeBron got foul calls today
He did.
on
He
his
did.
moves there.
Yeah, so there's been some hand-wringing about LeBron making it to the line. He made it to the he was took 9 free throws tonight. I only made 5, but I'll forgive him. Yeah, you wonder. I do wonder. I mean, they talked about it on ESPN. They talked about it on TNT. It was all over both the Cavs subreddit and the NBA subreddit. I saw a quadrant, or I saw a graph that was showing. I don't know if you saw this, but
I did see that, yeah.
it was on the y-axis was. Percent of field goals taken in the
Within
paint.
5 feet?
Yeah, within 5 feet. And then the x-axis was how often you get fouls called. And LeBron was like in the
Top
area
left.
where it's unfair.
Yeah,
Yeah,
like the top left.
where it seems it seems not good. There was some stuff on the Cavs subreddit about, like, oh, we need to, like, make a YouTube video showing the flagrant fouls against him and send it to the NBA, and I sort of shook my head and chuckled. But it did actually become a little bit of a meme the last 2 days, and you wonder if it reaches the officials and they sort of think about it in their subconscious.
Yeah, I think it does. Do you remember that Jeremy Lin thing? Someone made a video
No, what is
about
this?
basically the flagrant fouls he receives but never gets called.
Okay.
And he was the highest fouled player in the postseason for that first round series.
Huh.
He's never gotten that many calls. There was a game where he got like I think 12 foul calls or something. So
Yeah,
I
I
do think
mean,
it affects the I do think it affects how the referees perceive at least and how they call these games.
yeah, I think if it becomes a strong enough narrative, a common enough narrative, a repeated enough narrative that yeah, I
They try
mean,
to counter India.
yeah. So that's good. It's yeah, maybe. I mean, look, if LeBron can get like four more free ones at the line, I mean, that would be great.
I will take that.
Okay, I want to talk about two more things before we wrap up here. The first is, and then, we can get to anything you want to talk about. The first is, well, should we talk about? Yeah, let's talk about the crowd first. So, the crowd tonight was, well, okay. So, we talked about this a little bit last game, about how, the crowd, maybe isn't as loud in Cleveland as it could be in other places. We got an email where somebody suggested that, maybe there's a little bit of fatigue from the fans because, it's expected that the Cavs are going to make the finals. LeBron has been to the finals,
Five straight.
N years in a row now. Yeah, five straight, about to be six, which would be the first time since the 60s that that's happened. And, there's sort of a ho-hum feeling. The Hawks aren't very challenging, and so there's not a lot of excitement there. That's something to consider. However, I would point out that, the Warriors crowds are still unbelievable, and they're playing the Portland Trail Blazers without Steph Curry. And so, maybe they don't have as much fatigue since this is just, their second year of being an elite team. But yeah, other crowds seem to fight through the fatigue factor. So I'm not sure. I really don't know. Somebody suggested on Twitter that the 8 p.m. start times. So the last game was a 7 p.m. start. Tonight's game was an 8 p.m. start. Somebody suggested that 8 p.m. starts allow more time for tailgating, and he didn't say this,
People
but pres
tailgate for basketball games?
Well, tailgate, go to a bar, have a couple drinks.
Like pregame or something?
Presumably drinking makes people a little bit more boisterous. That was an
I think
interesting thought.
that's accurate if you drink. I mean, most of the louder people that I've seen around me at these games are typically inebriated.
I remember the game we went to. After my second beer, I got a little bit more full-throated.
Was also Boston, so
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really care. I was making noise just for fun, but yeah, whatever. There was some chatter on Twitter. So Nate Duncan tweeted that he thought that the Cavs crowd tonight was weirdly quiet, considering we'd made a record number of first half threes. And then he got a bunch of backlash. Several people responded to him that, the beat reporters and reports from inside the arena was that the crowd was really loud. And then Nate responded that, he decides if crowds are loud by watching if people are standing as an indicator, and he said that folks weren't on their feet after made threes. And look, we covered this sort of at length in the last show. It's hard to know objectively if the crowd's quieter, but I don't know. I thought the crowd seemed pretty good tonight. What did you think?
I thought it was okay. I thought it should have been louder, at least from my feed. So again, we gotta distinguish between what's actually happening in the arena and the feed that we're getting. Because I think, as you mentioned, Dave McMenamin tweeted out today, and I'm gonna quote him here. So what he said was, "Impossible to quantify this, but the crowd at the Q has been really fantastic tonight. Of course, the Cavs are giving them plenty to cheer about." So by his judgment, the crowd was pretty good. I just don't know. I have to go to a game to see. I can't tell from the feed.
And I would have to go to 10 games before I would even
Or
really
even
be
more
able
than,
to
yeah,
begin.
exactly.
And then I'd have to go to 10 games at other arenas. Like it's,
Like
it's.
I've been to Time Warner Cable Arena, which is the Charlotte Hornets arena. I've been to the Houston Rockets arena, and I've been to the obviously the Boston
TD
Celtics one.
Waterhouse Center, yeah.
Yeah, and they're all really loud, especially TD Garden. TD Garden gets really, really loud.
Yeah. I mean, the last game I was at Quicken Loans Arena was the home opener last year. So, it was LeBron's first game back, and that crowd was frickin' loud.
But yeah, that's an outlier, obviously.
Well,
Either
anyway,
way.
something for us to keep an eye on. I thought they were better tonight, and hopefully, they continue to be good. The last thing I wanted to talk about was so we talked about before the playoffs started about how if you look at the difference in teams SRS, so just a reminder for our listeners, SRS is a measurement of team quality that is basically how many more points they score per 100 possessions more than their opponents. And it's also adjusted for opponent quality. If you look at the difference in teams' SRSs, you can get a pretty good estimate of like how likely they are to win a game. And the gap between the Cavs and the Spurs and Warriors is about 5 points of SRS, which is just sort of an enormous amount. I don't have my model up right now, but for a gap that big, you're looking at like a 15% chance of winning a series with a gap that big. Actually, I think it's like a 12% chance. So that's, as I alluded to this earlier, that's part of the reason for some of my pessimism around the Cavs. How are you feeling about, let's say the Cavs were going to play, 20 regular seasons now. I feel like their SRS, their regular season SRS was like 5.8 or something like that. What do you think that their effective SRS is right now?
It's higher than that, definitely.
Yeah, I think it is
I
too.
mean, everyone's shooting well. So just simply based on that, I could even go like 8 or 9, assuming this shooting streak, obviously not tonight's game, but just in general, they're shooting 42 or 43% on threes, and they're making like 15 of them a game. So if
Yeah.
they keep that up, I think 8 or 9 is easily achievable. Who knows if that's going to be sustainable, right? Like, probably not, but
Yeah, I
if they
mean,
can just stay around there, that would be
it's
good.
such a small sample, so it's hard to know if what we're seeing is real, but I mean, this is the sample we have, and what we've seen has been freaking awesome. It's a little bit it's a little bit silly to ask this question tonight because we're obviously feeling very good, and the Cavs looked awesome. But yeah, I mean, I think 8 or 9 sounds about right. I think that Kevin Love's confidence on offense is something that's sustainable. I think Irving's improved play on offense is something that is sustainable. And I think this new sort of drive and dish persona that LeBron James has come up with, and the sort of commensurate bombs away mentality that the Cavs shooters are taking, is something that's sustainable and something that is basically the ideal strategy to take down the Warriors or Spurs. And so.
It's so much easier now, right? Because last finals, you remember, I mean, Kyrie wasn't there
And Love
after the
wasn't
first
there.
game, and Love wasn't
Yeah.
there. And those two guys are crucial for the Cavs spacing. I mean,
Right. I mean.
you replace Love with Timofey Mozgov, and you replace Kyrie with Delly, and you're suddenly, you don't have that much spacing. I
Right.
mean,
And Delly
Delly's
was
a good.
not. He
Go
wasn't
ahead.
as good at shooting last year as he was this year either. So, yeah, you had J.R. Smith as our number two option on offense. And, we didn't have Channing Frye. We didn't have. And then we didn't have Irving and Love. And so, yeah, I mean, we've added like sort of 3.5 because now that J.R. Smith has bumped down a little bit, I think he, is more able to get off his shot. Yeah, we've added like some really great shooters, and I think that is a sort of look, I still think we would lose, but it's a closer recipe for success than what we saw on Christmas Day and what we saw in late January when the Warriors blew us out.
Yeah, I think, like I said, if you had asked me before, what would be the Cavs' path to beating the Warriors? Cavs are never going to be like an elite defensive, top two, top three defensive team. They're always going to be a top three offensive team and a very good defensive team. So
Yeah.
as long as Cavs can maintain like a top 10-ish defense and just blow people out on offense, I think that's their best path to winning the finals. And
Yeah.
just FYI, to quantify this, Cavs have had an offensive rating of 115, and this was before tonight's game. I can assure you, after tonight's game, that number goes up.
Yes.
Like,
Yeah.
Cavs have been very slow. Their pace has been like 89 points per 89 possessions per game, and even in those 89 possessions, they're already scoring more than 100 several times in a row. So, like I
Yeah.
said, very good offense. Their defense has been up and down. It wasn't that good against the Pistons, but it's been very good against the Hawks. But we'll keep an eye on that as the series goes on.
Yeah. With an SRS difference of 2, the away team has a 30% chance of winning a series. So that is a big benefit. One other thing, I don't know how you feel, but I feel like the Warriors in particular are a little bit more. I feel like their regular season SRS. Yeah, well, I don't know. Here's what I was going to say. I think that they are not quite as good as they were at their peak. and their peak was so prolonged that I think their SRS is a little bit affected by that. I mean, they have the best regular season SRS in NBA history. I think now they're probably still a top five team in NBA history, but they don't have that sort of sheen of invulnerability. And, you know, Steph is going to be back in plenty of time before a would-be matchup with the Cavs in the finals. But, you know, what he
One
was
thing I want to
doing
mention,
was
though.
historic, and you can imagine him being knocked off of his rhythm a little bit.
Right. And I think Steph did have some injury issues right before even that ankle sprain, right? He had an, oh, sorry, before that knee sprain. He had an
Knee
ankle
sprain,
issue
yeah.
going on
Right,
before.
exactly. Right.
So he's been kind of hobbled this playoffs. I
Yeah.
mean, I don't think they obviously don't need him against Portland, but they're going to need him against
San
the
Antonio.
Spurs. And they're going to need him at pretty much his fullest strength against San Antonio. So it's
Right.
going to be interesting to watch that series. I think if he's hobbled and not 100%, or if he gets injured again, there's a good chance we don't even see them in the finals.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. The Warriors, with just Draymond, can beat the Blazers, but they can't beat the Spurs. Well, okay, it
Yeah,
would be highly
they
unlikely that
can,
they
but
would beat
it's
the
going to be
Spurs.
like the Hawks beating the Cavs, right? Like it's
Right,
unlikely.
exactly.
But it can
Yeah,
happen.
I try not to speak in absolutes. They would be probabilistically unlikely. That's about all I wanted to cover. Did you have anything else you wanted to chat about?
Shumpert dunked, which was a good sign.
Yes, and it was a vicious dunk. So, some of our listeners know this, but Shumpert's trials and tribulations with trying to dunk are sort of a frequently discussed topic of ours. He is athletic and likes to dunk, but he goes for these spectacular dunks, but he often misses them in somewhat embarrassing and sort of head-slapping fashion. But not tonight. Tonight he came in from the left baseline and threw down sort of a powerful left-handed slam. It was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, it was. And what do you think of Channing Frye as a teammate? I feel like I've actually enjoyed having him a lot on the team. I don't know if you follow like Richard Jefferson Snapchats, but I think a lot of people have, and
Words
I
that you would have never heard from an NBA fan 5 years ago. I follow them a little bit, but
so I
mostly
added him on
only when they.
Snapchat.
Okay, I am not a Snapchat user, but yeah, his snaps occasionally get vined and make it. But yeah, what can you update us on the latest?
Yeah, he's basically been carrying a cutaway of Kevin Love's face, and he's been putting it on the passenger seat of his car and driving around with it, which I thought was actually kind of funny.
That's pretty awesome.
And it's pretty obvious that he, Kevin Love, and Channing Frye are pretty close. So I think those three have a group going on, and then LeBron, JR, and Tristan have kind of their own group going on.
That's good. That's yeah, okay.
I think Love gets along with Frye and Richard Jefferson a lot.
That's good. Yeah, I mean it's tough to get close to Kevin Love, so it's good if that's indeed the case, that he's fraternizing a bit.
Yeah, and I think someone mentioned this on Twitter, and I kind of noticed it too, that there was a play where Channing Frye had Richard Jefferson open at the 3-point line, but he went for the layup, or I think he went for like a post move. And he ended up getting fouled. But as soon as he got called for the foul, he went up to Richard Jefferson and apologized, which I thought was a very good sign and just a very good moment for, team building and team chemistry.
Yeah, I'm having problems thinking of specific examples right now, but the Cavs' sort of optic team chemistry has been incredible lately. There were a couple hilarious moments in today's game when Tristan Thompson would get an offensive rebound or a dunk. He had a really fun dunk tonight. I thought he traveled, but it was a nice two-handed dunk. And Mozgov just like got up and was jumping around going nuts. And yeah, I mean you can imagine him sulking. But yeah, I mean it's just they look the energy is great right now. We're gonna have to see what happens after a loss. Hopefully that doesn't happen, but yeah, I mean, I'm feeling like at sort of an all-time high. We're at a local maximum right now.
Yeah, we're definitely at a local maximum. I
Yeah.
agree with that. Where do you see the series going? I think both of us were Cavs in five, right? Do you still agree with that, or do you think it's going to be a sweep?
Boy.
Like
Let
you can
me.
kind of see the Cavs loosening up a little after this nice game in especially when they go to the Hawks ground. It's possible, right? I'm still gonna stick with Cavs in five. I think they'll drop one on their court.
So with an SRS difference of 5, and the Cavs and Hawks actually only have an SRS difference of like 1.5, but I think they have like an effective SRS difference of 5. On the road, the Cavs have a 56% chance of winning a game. So just the math there, 56% times 56% is well below 50. So probabilistically, it would go 5 games. But obviously, this model doesn't take into account momentum and that kind of stuff. So, am I gonna? No, I still think it'll go 5 games. I think the Cavs are most likely to lose game three. I think they probably have maybe a 40%. Maybe they probably have like a 65% chance of winning game three. And then if they
And
win game
price,
three. And
I
if
think
they
it
win
goes
game
up,
three,
right?
probably like 70, but even that would still be below 50%, so that's why I think it would go 5 games.
I agree with that. And but I would be more surprised if it went above six, if it above went above 5 games than I would be if it was a sweep, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, if it goes six, I will be
So I'm saying four and f 4 plus 5 is more likely than 6 and 6 plus 7.
right. I agree. Yeah, if it goes six, we're going to really put to a test our attempts to be positive.
Yeah, that is correct. Okay, that's pretty
So,
much all I have for tonight.
all right. So, this has been episode 21 of Cavalytics. You can email us at cavalyticsnba@gmail.com, and you can follow us on Twitter at cavalyticsnba. And thanks for listening. Go Cavs.